Stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the IBM Taking the Guesswork Out of Auditing IMS Data Conference Call. Today's call is being recorded. For opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Sally Tuscany. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you very much, and thanks to all of our customers for joining us today. Auditing IMS environments is a rapidly growing concern for all of our customers. Today, we have Barry Davis from Rocket Software, which is one of our premier development partners, presenting ways to better manage this auditing process in the IMS environment. Now I'd like to turn it over to Barry. Go ahead and get started. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sally. And welcome, everybody. What we're going to be discussing today is the IMS Audit Management Expert tool. It is the second in a line of tools that we have been building for auditing with all of the excitement, we'll call it, on the compliances that companies need to provide now with the different regulations. So we've built this type of tool for DB2, and we've got the IMS one. This one's been out for, I think it's been GA for about 3 months. So it's a new entry, and there'll be even another one a little later in the year for other platforms. And with that, I wanted to move on in. I'm on page 2 of our agenda here. And what I'll give you is just a little overview of the features, architecture, hopefully let you understand that this tool is really the end user of this tool is your auditing group, your management group, and auditing staff, and even designed for outside auditors to come in and use it. So we'll go into those features, and those features are really oriented around the reporting of for a non-technical type, if you will, group. Then we'll go into a walkthrough of the screenshots, since we're not doing a live, and try to explain that and give you a good look and feel of what the interface looks like. And then we'll have a little session of questions and answers if you have any. So bear with me, and we'll go on to slide 3. And basically, there's really the important things is what are our sources of information and how we set that up. If you're the IMS systems person or the IMS DBA, you already know that, you know, what my sources, I've got my IMS log, and the log I can get out of that. And also, we're going to be using the SMF logs for additional information. So what the tool is going to do is allows us to fire it up, and it will collect and correlate that information and then store it in a repository. And then the reporter side of it, which would, again, hopefully be our clientele there, is the auditing group or management group, can come in and make understandable information out of that. So, again, it's an effort to comply with all the regulatory issues that we are all faced with today. And probably the biggest thing is once it's installed, the tool really doesn't have to be nurtured or anything by the systems group. And usually the first people that get audited are the systems groups, the IMS DBAs or the systems programmers. And with this type of tool, it really allows us to separate those roles and lets the auditing staff or management staff do the auditing without a lot of interaction with the systems group. So on slide 4, what we want to come into and talk about the auditing tasks that are required, it basically all of your data, whatever DBMS you store it in, in this case IMS, we want to be able to come in and find out that not only maybe the who, where, what, and when something was accessed, updated, modified, whatever, but also just the trends and reading. Like to an auditor, if a certain object is set of data is reviewed or read or opened by a routine set of applications, there becomes a line there of frequencies. And with Audit Management Expert, we can indicate when those frequencies kind of go out of the norm. So even with that, it allows a lot of those common tasks to be done very, very simply, if you will, by the auditor. It can go down into very, very deep detail. When we look at the presentation of the information collected, we'll be able to drill down and look at the actual tabular, detailed record type of the who, where, what, when again. So It has that capability. Now, also for an auditor, he's not going or she's not going to be looking at the entire world all the time. Auditors come in and have to have some kind of edict that we want to audit payroll at this time for a couple of weeks, or we want to audit this. There may be certain sources of data that we really watch all the time as far as access. And the auditor has complete control, or the end user has complete control of setting up these filtering policies and collection policies without having to go back to the systems groups to accomplish this. So providing that makes it very, very easy to implement. On FOIL 5, this is kind of a repeat. It allows that auditing group to accomplish this, gather the information, review the information without being an IMS user. They don't have to have any ZOS expertise, IMS expertise necessarily. They don't even have to have a log on to the mainframe. It allows them to accomplish their job without having to interact with the systems or database administrators. The auditors are limited in what they can do. They can't manipulate any of the sources, any of your IMS structure or anything else, or anything in MVS for that matter, unless they're authorized otherwise, but not through this tool. On slide 6, again, one of the most important things and probably the biggest impacted task as you're doing it right now for the systems people is the data collection. Collecting all this information, how do I store it, where do I put it, and what kind of reports do I have to write to get stuff out of it? We're taking care of all that for you. Now, our data collection, we're using, as I said, the SMF and the IMS logs. This will allow us to, using the SMF information, any kind of access to the database or even image copies of the databases. The IMS logs, we will catch anything that goes on in there with a little caveat on that at the moment. The connections to the systems, the sign-on records that we're going to capture from the logs, the PSB and database change of state information, start and stop information, all that's coming from our IMS log. And there's quite a bit of detail on that. We'll see it when we see the report writers. One thing that's not there at the moment, and that's because of our data collection sources, again, being SMF and IMS log, the IMS log doesn't do a GetDB entry into the log, if you will. So the read, so that we can get that information in some different fashions. We're hopefully going to expand upon that in future. But right now, the total number of reads for a database we can get from the accounting information from accounting information. On slide 7, just getting into the architecture a little bit. There's a report writer interface. It's a GUI interface. Again, it is designed not for technical people. It's designed for auditing staffs. Provides the auditors with very flexible options for reviewing the data, abilities to save, criteria of how they want to view the data, like date ranges or filtering or et cetera. And then there's a GUI administrative interface, and this interface, again, is designed for the auditing or management staff to configure the usage of this tool. It has a range in it so that they can set up who can use access the report writer, what is data of interest that we may want to harden into the repository. Not necessarily does everything have to be put into the repository if that's not data of interest, which is one of the challenges that, you know, as a DBA now or a systems person, when you collect everything, you know, if you write it to SMF, it's all out there and you have to come in and filter it all out. That's being done inside the tool based off of what the administrator says is something of interest. So they can create their auditing profiles and report authorizations and accept without, again, having to go back to the systems group to accomplish this. On slide 8, we're looking at the components in a little more detail. For installation, we have a server component that's running as a started task. The server is what people connect to. It manages the storage of information, if you will, the configuration. There's an agent component. Again, it runs as a started task or a batch job. And server-wise, you'll only need one server for your entire installation. Agents, again, though, you'll need one of those per IMS, and the agent is actually any IMS system you want to audit. And the agent is actually the data collector component, if you will. The agent is working off of instructions from the server, and those instructions in the server are what someone would set up in the admin interface. The client is a GUI. It is Windows-based only, and it has your reporting and also, as I said earlier, the administrative. Now, the repository, where we write this information, it's a DB2 set of tables. It's a database in DB2. And we use DB2. Again, as I said, this is the second in a group of audit management tools that we have developed, and we are trying to keep them as consistent interface-wise and repository-wise. And so DB2 was our de facto, if you will, repository, since we did the DB2 audit management expert first. So that's where everything is written. The agent's collecting it based off of instructions from the server component. What is stored in the repository is maybe not everything, depending on what your collection profile is set up as. Now, the profiles, as I have in the last part here, they define what is being collected. They define who has authority to come in and actually use the reporter or do any administrative work. Users are can be authorized through the administrative interface. And again, these users do not have to be they don't have to have a TSO sign on. They don't have to have a RACF entry. They don't have to have a number of those things. It allows really the simplicity of administrating this for even external auditors. If you have a group of external auditors come in and they need access, really you don't have to set them up in the whole world. You can just set them up with into Audit Management Expert, and they can start seeing data. And even if you give them a certain amount of authority, they can start selecting what needs to be collected, and makes it very, very simple. And when we set up one, we'll go through the administrative interface screenshots in a little bit. On slide 9, we have a little picture here, if you will. There's a number of ways to configure this. But the server and the repository, they can be running on pretty much any LPAR. The repository, again, it can actually be on a different LPAR from the server. But that's one of your main components, is we've got to have a DB2 subsystem somewhere where we create the repository. Doesn't matter actually where. Then we have the server component, and again, that's where our graphical user interfaces, the admin or the report writer, are going to connect to, if you will. And we use TCP/IP port numbers, so there's not a lot of additional information required as far as communications. The agents, there could be one or many. Again, you need an agent component for each IMS system that you wish to monitor. And then, again, the reflection of the IMS log and the SMF log as our sources of information there. That's it for the kind of quick overview. I'm sure we might have some questions, but we'll walk through now, go to slide 11, and we'll walk through the report writer components or screenshots first. As you can see there, we have username, password. Again, that is a username, password that is stored within the Audit Management Expert repository. And by the way, when we store those, when someone using the administrator interface creates a user, the user information, the password, is encrypted so that, you know, like a DB2 DBA can't go in and suck it out and look at it. It has encryption. If you have encryption running in your environment, we will use that. If not, we have our own hashing code that will take care of that. But the data is stored encrypted as far as user passwords are concerned. And it also, in user passwords, you can set expiration dates. So say I have an external auditor come in and I set him up for a 30-day job and it'll automatically expire their passwords. We keep track within the system the last three passwords used for a user and don't allow those to be repeated. This, you know, basic security type of thing. So this is our logon screen, ID and password, logon, and it makes a connection to the report writer. So on page 12, this is kind of busy. I put a lot of stuff in the screen capture, so I'm going to spend a few minutes here walking through this. As you can see across the top, it's talking about I have a set of reporting for the IMS systems, set of report for the data sets, and I have some ad hoc reporting. I have circled overview because this first screen is the high-level overview. I have the calendar popped up. You can bring the calendar up at pretty much any report display and define a range, if you will, of data that you wish to view. I think what I selected here is like from February to December, or January through February, sorry, of this year. And so it's very easy for someone to just click on and change the range of dates that you wish to review on. Kind of underneath that little popped-up calendar, there's a legend at the top which reflects the either IMS data type or SMF data type that is represented. So as you can see, IMS start, stops, reads, changes, sign-on, sign-off, etc. And the icon in the middle with all the green check marks, that's really all one icon, if you will. And the green check marks is kind of doesn't tell you much at the moment other than if you're familiar with it, it is normal. What we're viewing is the set of data based off of the collection window and et cetera. And it's representing that, you know, everything looks normal. These are what we call flags, if you will, to flag data of interest to an auditor. They're not going to read every line of everything. So in my next foil, I'll show you a little bit more what I mean. We've changed our date range. We click, give it an OK and a refresh. And then if we look at foil 13, we see now that center icon has changed. And we've got a red X for first updates of IMS, and we have a caution sign, if you will, on the IMS starts and stops. Now, the ability to control what would be flagged here is strictly up to that end user, that auditor. If he wants to see, he or she wants to see some kind of out of normal workload or read load or start stop load, they can click on the edit thresholds, which you see down there at the bottom left, and that will pop up and allow that user to adjust for that user himself, not everybody, what would be the thresholds of data of interest. So let's go to foil 14, and I have that screen popped up, and its way it's set up is that for if the value is less than a normal threshold, they're going to get a green check mark on that data type. If it's between, in my first example there, 500 to 1,000, then it's going to come in. If it's over 500, it'll come in as that warning icon. And if it's over, in this case, 1,000, then it's going to be flagged as critical. Again, this is just a way for an auditor to flag trends to let them know that maybe they need to go investigate deeper into this information. So this is completely controllable by the end user, by data type, the values. We can set this up. So we've adjusted already the date range, and we've adjusted our threshold values. There are also some things that an auditor can do in this reporting, and that's I've gone to foil 15, and underneath we're still at the high level. You can see I've circled set filters. That auditor can adjust the filtering. Again, to say he's only interested in certain PSBs, certain users, certain batch jobs, certain databases, and set a filtering criteria so that the data being represented is only on what that auditor or management person wants to focus on. Now, once they've set that, they can do that ad hoc as they look at the report, or they can actually adjust those and save them. I'm going to 4L16, and they take and go up to the top left tab. They click on report. Then what we're going to do is do a save as, and we could save our adjustments. So the next time I come in, I can reopen that report, if you will, and my criteria for filtering, criteria for date range, criteria for threshold values are all saved, and I can just reinitiate that and look, you know, apples for apples type of thing. So that, and this again, these report definitions, if you will, are saved by that individual user on their client machine that they're using to run the report writer. Let's move on to 4L17. And what we have here, I didn't show you how to click on it. I guess go back to 4L16 and I'll point it out. Down at the bottom, to the left, there's three windows, the refresh, the edit threshold, and there's the collection history. Pretend we clicked on collection history and go to 4L17. What we're showing you here, and again, this is extremely important to auditing staff, is the reflection of when we were actually collecting data. When was the agent collecting information about that IMS system? So as you can see, we have the down, not collecting, and collecting. And an auditor sees a gap in something, or if they want to know where the data was actually collected, we do audit that also, and this report comes in very handy for them. On 4L18, this is our first entry. We've left the overview, and we've gone to the subsystem. All we had to do was just click on subsystem. On the left, on our report options, you can see subsystem, and mine is on RSO1 K9A1. That's the IMS subsystem where we're viewing. We have log type capabilities, whether I want to just see IMS or whether I just want to see SMF log information and activity results. I'm viewing everything. Also, you'll notice in the circle there I have, we can set the granulation of time either by hour, by day, by week, or month. And this currently is set by week. And then we have our other buttons there at the bottom, if you will. Anything that we're viewing graphically has raw data underneath it, and you can export that. And when you export it, it's going to be saved onto that client's reporter in a tabular format. We'll see that in a little more detail in a second. Modifying my options, I'll get into that, a little bit of my chart options. Color display, we won't get into too much. In the windows, I'm showing three windows here right now. And what I'm showing, first top left window, is the absolute count of activity broken out by the legend, if you will. And you'll notice the H data values, which is the user sign off, has a red flag on it there at the top. 153 records were critical. That means that they were some kind of failure of signing on, signing off, et cetera, et cetera. So we're flagging data within the icons themselves to show data of interest. Again, this is designed to help the auditor find what he needs to go really drill down into. The window at the bottom is the absolute count by whatever time granulation you picked, week, hour, month, day, and again, in this case, it's week. And then the graphing, if you will, shows kind of a data value. So we're looking at the week 9 of 2007, and you can see most of the activity was there. And in this case, in this demo system, that's probably where I did most of the work. The window to the upper right is a threshold summarization. So, and it changes depending on the reflection of the time granularity that you've chosen and the thresholds that we were talking about a while ago. So I've got two data types, B and I, which is first update, and PSB start and stop, that have a warning flag in there. And you'll notice the legend, it goes from 0 to 6. So we actually are looking at 6 weeks worth of information. And it is trying to reflect to me that in the last week, week 4, we did have a threshold that was reached. And these thresholds, again, were set up by that end user. Now, we also have some other control knobs for this display that we can remove and certain pieces of information if we don't want to see it. I'll get into that in just a second. Quite a bit of graphical information being displayed to you here. Doesn't take very much work to figure out what it's trying to tell you. So let's move on to foil 19. On foil 19, what I'm trying to show you here is that I've got a little red arrow on the C-type data, which is my first delete for IMS, and I put a little red arrow there to represent my cursor. When you put your cursor on any one of these columns, you're going to get that description. And that's what I've circled here. You're going to see a pop-up description that says IMS first delete absolute count. And then if I drill down on that icon, double-click on it, we will take you to foil 20, and you will see that we bring back the actual raw data that's building that icon. And this is a row or a set of rows. Again, this is 11 rows that was implicating in the implying in the icon. And it is the detailed information. There is quite a bit off to the right and left that with screen captures I can't slide back and forth, as you know. But this is the raw detail. And if an auditor finds something of interest in here, it's got the who, where, what, when description, event types, which is the IMS record from the IMS log, etc. User, which is almost chopped off there. You can't quite see the username. If this is something that I wish to retain, I can export it, like I mentioned earlier, from the first screen. And when I export it, it's saved on that client machine in comma-separated variable length format, where then the auditor, if they have an additional tool for reporting or making graphs or something that they wish to use, that makes the data available directly into those other tools if they want to. Let's go to foil 21. And here I've popped up my chart options. We're still at the subsystem level. On my art chart options, I have the ability to hide certain columns of information if I don't wish to see it. The first inserts maybe or rollbacks or whatever. The threshold chart that we talked about in the upper right corner, summary by the timeline and the threshold values, you can actually hide that complete chart if you wish. Also, the way that we graph can be modified here. Now, that can be done later on also. But overall, I can change it from a linear type axis graph to a logarithmic axis, which when you get a very, very large amount of one type of data, it kind of skews the graph. So this gives you the ability to kind of adjust that where it makes it easier to read. So again, more controls for the end user there. Let's go to 22. And now we have moved to the subsystem detail. We've gone down one more level. So we started overview, we went to a subsystem, and now we are at a subsystem detail level. We don't have too many legends on here. We're getting into the detail record. I'm showing you three windows. The bottom window is always, again, my timeline, absolute count of activity by whatever time granularity we were looking at, in this case a week. The top window is showing me the data broken out in absolute count by activity for the time window that we have in our calendar. And then the middle window is reflecting back to me a number of different views. This case, I have job highlighted in the circle there, if you see on the left. So I can change this middle chart display to show results and counts and labels, if you will, by user, by job, by PSB type, by PSB name, and by database. So each time I change that, it reflects the count differently, still the same total number of records, but I can break it out, if you will, by different categories, which makes that very, very useful. I'll wait to the next chart before I get into something there. So, again, we're having, I think this is the only screen I show for the subsystem detail. So let's go on to foil 22. In foil 22, now we have left the IMS system, if you will, and we've switched over. If you'll notice at the top now, it says data sets. And so we are looking at a summary by data set. So this is another report type. Top window, again, is my absolute SMF data count. So all of this data is coming from SMF in this particular graph. As you can see, this number of create, delete, rename, open, update, etc. will expand, if you will. There may be more than just the types I have there. And if that's the case, this is kind of hard to describe, but if you look at that top window and then look at the first line above that off to the right, you see a plus sign in a box, a minus sign, and an error. This graphical interface is very dynamic. If there's more information there or it's jammed up too small in that window, that singular window can be expanded right or left by just clicking on the plus sign, and it will expand out and make it easier to read and enlarge. And then I can shrink it back down using just that window back down left and right using the minus or the arrow key brings it back to normal. And that can be done, as you can see, in any one of those three windows. The middle window is where I have my options to select a count, show me the top 5, show me the top 10, show me the top 20, by job name, by user, by database, by data set. So we're taking the total raw data at the top window, and then I can break it out and view it with the same counts by either different users, different jobs, which will change the label and change the representation of the icons by count. Again, in the bottom window is our timeline with absolute count by day or week, or in fact, this particular display is by day. All the others we've looked at are by week. So that's our summary of data sets. Again, another report there. Sorry about that. If we go to FOIL 24, we can see that we've drilled down on one of the icons, and it again brings up our tabular. It's the SMF open read. So we can go in and get timestamps, everything that's available to us from the SMF record on the data set, and again can be exported or just viewed here. On FOIL 24, we move to a new set of reporting. Notice at the top we started with our system, we went to data sets, and now we're looking at some what we just call ad hoc. And there's a number of breakouts here. And again, this window at the top is a perfect example of one that you would want to stretch, if you will, wider, off to the right and left. Because you can see our labels are almost overriding each other. So it's very easy for the end user just to click on that plus sign, and it will expand that singular window over to the right or left. It makes it very easy for them to read. There's a number of labels on there, the starts, the sign-ons, the stop PSB, start database, commands, force. This is all the information we're getting in our IMS log and represented here. The middle window, again, is the adjustable window, which I can display by job, by user, by database, breaking out this information. I think on all these you'll notice, too, that I have the log axis. Is the one that I have because we have some high numbers and some low numbers. I've got that 1,318 in the middle there, but graphically it's coming out very clean and nice looking because we've gone to the log instead of the other method for the axis. The bottom again is our timeline. We're back to weeks, and we can see the peak work. When was the work actually taking place for the most part? So this ad hoc report is very nice. Again, can be by job, user, or database. That is the FOILs that I have that gives you a good representation, I think, good look and feel for the reporting interface. We're going to move on now to the admin interface so that you can understand, you know, how we set this up, how you can control it, etc. So on FOIL 27, I've kind of skipped the log-on screen, but it's just like the other component. I don't know if I mentioned this, but when you install these on your PC, there will actually be two installs. It's done in one wizard, basically. I'm sorry, two different wizards. One installs the Audit Management Expert Administrator, and the other one installs the Report Writer. Not everybody will need the administrator, just those in either the management or the audit group that's going to control this. So we fired up the administrator graphical interface, and as you can see, I have my tabs across the top here. I have the users, the groups, which IMSs, the agents. These are all things that we'll walk through to configure what we want. The first one is users. So we have a basic set of users, the ADH admin, a limited user. Limited users, we're going to see a little more detail, but you can see that the blank checkboxes of whether that user can connect, whether that user can create different components, these are examples that come with the product. And so we're going to click on Add down at the bottom there. And if we say we want to add a new user, go to FOIL 28, and we get a fill-in-the-blank. And again, remember, this is a interface for non-technical people. So don't, you know, if you're a systems programmer, you don't have to worry about any detail on that. This is a very, very simple interface to allow the auditors or management groups to create and control this environment. Username, password. Password is has some certain requirements, alphanumeric, minimum length, and it is encrypted when it's stored. You can put in a description, and we can set an automatic expiration date for the password itself. So if this is an outside auditor coming in, they've just been allowed 14 days before their password expires. Completely controllable there. They click on Next down at the bottom, and it will move into the permissions capabilities. And in this case, the only permission we gave this auditor was the ability to connect to the Audit Management Expert Report Writer, and then that will allow them to do some things, to do the reporting. They can't do, you know, create users or create groups, manage the repository, etc. Those are all more high-level administrative functions. Click Next, and if you want, we have the functionality of groups of authority, if you will, and you could put this user into a group which already has the definitions assigned for them, makes administration a little easier. Click on Next, and at the end, the summary. Now, and we'll show you summary a number of times for each type of work we're going to do, but the summarization is a nice little report that just reflects back what is set up for that particular user. We'll see a summary for collection profile, etc. And they can basically kind of copy these and print them out for a management report if they need to. So we click Finish, and that completes creation of a user. Go to FOIL 32, and I'm going to skip groups because I think you understand that. We're going to go to the IMSs. We're going to add an IMS that we wish to monitor. I already have one in there. Click on Add, and it's requiring us to give us the name. We can put in a description. IMS versions, we support 8 and 9 in the release that's GA right now. IMS version 10 will be supported in a PTF coming out very soon for those of you who are planning on moving to 10. So you select the version of the IMS. Click on Agent. Let's go to FOIL 33. We'll get a pull-down list here. We can configure the agent that we have created out there. Again, now this is going to be the installer who will fire up these agents or your scheduling package or whatever. Then once we have for this IMS system, we only need one agent for each system. We're going to need a little bit more information, so we go to the recons. And here I need some specifics on that. This information the auditor's probably not going to have in his head, so they'll have to interface with the systems group and the IMS DBAs. But I need the ResLive data set name and then the recons. I didn't mention this earlier, but all the IMSs that the IMS Audit Management Expert will monitor have to be defined in DBRC, and have to have a recon, obviously, for DBRC. So that's a requirement. We'll go down and look at the summarization on the definitions. And again, this can be reported, printed if you wanted to. And click Finish. This is FOIL 36. click finish, and we're basically done. And that's how you would configure the IMS. So we've got given the IMS name. We have to have an agent configured for that. Define me the recons. We're ready to go. The agents themselves on foil 37, we're going to go in and edit this agent instead of creating a new one. So I have an agent out there. Its state is it's collecting. On the log levels, if you'll notice that, it's saying info. Basically, that gives me the ability to switch the detail of the logging for debugging purposes. And the SMF mask we'll get into. So let's edit this one. We'll go to foil 38. And in foil 38, we start off. The log level is a drop-down list that I can change so that I can put more detailed messages out there if I wish. We'll need to define the SMF mask. So let's click one more, foil 39. And I put in a masking. Now, if you're in data sharing, we will support data sharing and collect that information. The what I have here, you'll notice the mask for RS01, mask for RS02. The tool has found that for me. The SMF mask, if you're most likely probably writing SMF dump to GDGs, you can go to whatever data set you put in here for the SMF data. And this is the whole dump data set for that LPAR. A lot of shops implementation would be that after the SMF dump data set is created, that we run an extract off of that of only the record types of SMF that we wish and create like an audit management expert data set, SMF dump data set, if you will. We supply in the install and the sample lib everything you need to do that to extract from your SMF dump data set if you're not familiar with that. And so I bet you this information is needed so that we know where to go get our SMF data. Also, something internally is that, say that this is GDG 10, the tool knows that he's already read GDG 10 and will check based off of a install parameter how often it will go look at the SMF dump data sets. And it's pretty well laid out in the manual. But it won't be rereading all the SMF data sets. It will only look for new ones after it's read one. And again, we get our summarization report if you need that on foil 40. On foil 41, we'll talk now, probably the most critical component is the collection profiles. And again, this is a collection, this is the definition of what we want to view and how we want to, that we want to store it into the repository for long term. So let's go to foil 41. We're defining a collection profile here. We can give it a name, a description, and notice on the left side here we kind of have a tree. We're going to tell it the source, and then we have rule one. We can have multiple rules in here for maybe something that's ongoing all the time, and we want to harden all that data, or we may have a short-term project with rule two that we might want to collect different amount of data and then has a limited life, etc. So let's go to 443. The source will be a drop-down pick list, so the auditor can look at its IMS V9, the IMS name, if there's others out there, and they can choose that. Go to 44, and we pick about targets. Now, the targets are going to be our IMS database. We get a pick list, the database. We can set a filtering for the pick list if you wish. My target filter, I just put in an asterisk and got everything. And I've already added most of them in there. You can highlight, remove, add all, remove all, etc. Also, if you're setting this up and the database hasn't been created yet, but you want to put it into the collection profile down at the bottom, you can put in other targets that weren't found and put that in there. Don't have to use that very often, but you can. So what we've done here is basically we've selected almost every database to be audited for my particular example. And then you just click, go to 445, excuse me, well, you just click finish and save, and that takes care of the collection profile. On 445, I want to show you one other thing, and that's the authorizations. As I said, I skipped a few of the tabs in there that there's not a whole lot to see. When you have created a user, you have to come over to authorizations and then authorize that user to be a connect to the report writer, if you will. And with that authorization, that completes setting up that user. And you can clone those and copy them, etc. On 446, I think we're all done. And it would be time for any questions or review of anything. So, Diane, you want to open it up for questions, please? Or Diana?
Thank you, sir. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If you are using a speakerphone, please be sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. We'll pause just a moment to allow everyone a chance to signal by pressing star 1. Again, if you are using a speakerphone, please be sure your mute function is turned off so that your signal reaches our equipment. And we'll go to Mike Cofino of Blue Cross and Blue Shield.
Yes, hello. I'd like to ask a question as far as the actual detail that this report gives you. A lot of our auditors want to know if a particular RAC FID has logged on all day, and for us to tell them a detailed description of all the transactions that they processed. Also, for wait for input, we normally have a processing limit count of 10,000, so the 07 accounting record only keeps track of the last user ID at the time of termination. We put in a user mod that splits that out, you know, into 10,000 individual records. But does your product allow you, with the processing limit count or wait for input, to get granular to see what activity individual users do?
This is not a real-time system, I think is one of the basically what you're asking. For the sequence of reading the IMS logs as they're being written, we don't do that. The IMS logs we scan on a time basis, looking for any new logs, etc. Same for the SMF dump data set. So say that your man files fills in 4 or 5 hours, you do maybe a lot quicker, I don't know. Then that gets switched and the system does the dump from the man file and then creates a new GDG data set. The tool will scan that and find on a time basis, it goes out and checks. So say worst case about every 4 or 5 hours, we're getting a new additional data. I think, does that answer part of your question there?
Well, the question really was, is from an auditing standpoint, if they want to take a particular user who has a unique RAC FID, and they want to get a detailed report of what activity that person did or did not do, or did they access this particular account number, or would, you know, from a real granular level, or like we're in the insurance business, and you know people's medical information is confidential. So if somebody discloses confidential information, they may want us to go back and try to determine who accessed that confidential information. I don't know if your product is that granular.
Basically you're trying to comply with the HIPAA requirement.
Yes.
Looking at health.
Plus they want to know if somebody's, like, let's say somebody works from home, and they said they put in overtime. They want us to even, and they question about the amount of work that this person does. They would like us to go back and tell them from the time they logged on this morning, if they logged on, what transactions did they do, what the date and time did they do the transactions, in what sequence, and you know, that granular detail level, does the product allow you to get down there and actually look at the nitty-gritty of what they did in an IMS system without having to write your own programs or extract it from the IMS logs?
Right. The actual data values on that, well, let me back up a bit. By user, yes, I can come in and I can set my filtering and go into my data set summary, or I can go into my ad hoc and I can set it by user, and I can see everything that user did by type of work, either whether it's creating or renaming or reading an image copy or whatever. Or come in and look at the different databases, PSBs, everything that person did by user for whatever time range. Now, your time range, again, Audit Management Expert is out there running. The agent's collecting all the time as new data comes available from the logs of the SMF data sets. And then we store that into our DB2 repository. So if I wanted to say from midnight last night to midnight the day before, show me everything that user A did, we're going to be able to give you a set of information what that user did. Now, down to the granularity, when I drill down onto that user and get into the tabular format, extract the rows right out of the repository, what we don't have is like the data values that he did. So we probably about 75% of what you're asking is capable in there.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And with no questions holding, we'll pause just a moment to allow everyone a final chance to signal by pressing *1 for any questions. And with no further questions, I'd like to turn the conference back over to Ms. Sally Tuscany for any additional or closing remarks.
Okay. Well, Barry, thank you very much for your time this morning, and thank you to our customers for joining us. We certainly appreciate your time. If you should have any questions, please feel free to contact Barry or myself, Sally Tuscany. I can be reached at area code 724-940-6506 or at Tuscany, Tuscany, at us.ibm.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your participation. That does conclude today's conference. You may disconnect at this time.